James N. Johnson, the College Counsel, and James B. Henry, the Department of Appeals Counsel.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Justice and Associate Justice. If I may reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Sometimes it doesn't happen. I hope you realize that.
Yes, Your Honor, I will try.
I'll try to help you out.
Thank you. My name is James Johnson. I represent Ravinas Rajmathew in this appeal. Your Honor, this is the case of a personal injury matter that was set to go to trial. The injury itself occurred back in 2012. There was an initial filing, a non-suit, and then the case that is proceeding forward. In this matter, Your Honor, there's a very convoluted discovery that was taking place. There's issues with whether or not there was an actual active insurance policy regarding this case, which led to two prior continuances of the trial date. Initially, the case was set to take place in February 2017, but on a joint motion by both counsel in January 2016, counsel called to docket control in Fairfax County, requested a continuance from February to March. That way we could investigate this new document that had been discovered in discovery. Once it was determined that that insurance company was no longer actively issuing policies in Virginia and there was going to be issues with getting service and verifying the policy, the matter was continued from March by joint motion again through the docket call from March out to October 17, 2017.
Yeah, interrupt you for a minute. Am I right that this is a dismissal with prejudice that was wholly sua sponte?
Yes, Your Honor. And I'm
the defense counsel conceded all along that he didn't have a problem with the illness reason for the ultimate continuance.
That is my understanding, Your Honor. Just to further the timeline, Your Honor, on October 17th, we were set and prepared to go to trial. However, defense counsel, Mr. Hunley, had a matter proceeding before this court. He received a letter saying that on our trial date, he was to appear here. So, of course, we called Chambers again and said, obviously, the defense counsel could not be present for trial date, and the matter was continued one last time for 2 weeks from October 17th to the 31st.
We appreciate the professional courtesy accorded to opposing counsel for that occasion.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and I would like to also state that defense counsel has been very professional and courteous throughout this. I really enjoyed this case with Mr. Hunley. It's unfortunate that we've had to get to this point where we are here today. And, Your Honor, on October 26th, I was home with my, at that point, 4-year-old son who was homesick from school. I caught his illness that Saturday. I began to show symptoms of it. That Sunday, which was the 28th, I was unable to eat or keep any food down. That Monday morning, I went to a doctor to get medication because I knew I had trial coming up. Went through the medication, was still unable to eat all day Monday on the 30th. I contacted defense counsel, let him know of my condition, approximately 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Monday. Continued throughout the night trying to get myself to a position where I would be able to represent my client. Notified my client as well of my condition. When I woke up Tuesday morning, was not able to adequately represent my client, is the best way I would put it. Had no energy, completely fatigued, couldn't eat anything, was surviving off of Pedialyte at that point. And I contacted defense counsel early in the morning, about 8:15 in the morning, let him know, apologize profusely. Told him that I'm aware that because I'm the one that's unable to be there, that I'll obviously be facing some kind of sanction from the court, whether it be the cost of the jury, because I would be seeking a continuance, and that way we were inconveniencing the community to come in to be a jury, and now they're being told there is no jury. I explained that I'm perfectly aware that's probably going to happen. I accept that. Mr. Hunley said, okay, he did not object to my continuance because I had made him aware the day before. He was aware of my condition. He informed me that he would relay that to the court. Well, I contacted Chambers.
Did you get sick on purpose?
Well, actually, no, Your Honor. I was ready for this case to end a year and a half ago.
I'm just wondering whether your own suggestion that was a basis for sanctions was perhaps stretching it a little bit. If he got sick on purpose, I think maybe we'd consider sanctions.
Well, Your Honor, whenever you inconvenience the community to come in, I think that somebody's responsible for that, and that's a part of practice that you sometimes risk, I believe. Because to ask the community to take off of work to come in to be a jury, I think that's a very big thing. Because I practice not only personal injury work, but criminal work, so a jury is the ultimate thing for me. But when I contacted the chambers that morning, made chambers aware of my condition, left my cell phone number, said if you have any questions or concerns, please feel free to call me.
Can I stop you there? Was it clear to the staff people you talked to that it was an unobjected to continuance?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And then I contacted my office and made sure my office called to confirm that Chambers got my message and that my cell phone number was available. At that point, all the information I have from there is what I've received from conversations with Mr. Hundley and with my client. So I have no personal knowledge of what exactly took place in the courtroom. All I know is that apparently my client was a few minutes late and that the judge appeared, spoke to Mr. Hundley, and the gist of it is I understand plaintiff's counsel is not present today, he's not going to be present. You know, what do you want to do? So my understanding, Mr. Hundley said that he had extended the courtesy to me to agree to a continuance because I had kept him informed of all this. There was no seeking of delay. We were primed and ready to go. We had already had the David and essay deposition of the doctor done. We had the DVD of that. The case was going to come down to testimony by the police officer, my client, and possibly the defendant in the plane of the David and essay deposition. So everything was prepared and ready to go. The only thing that prevented us from being able to go forward was my illness on that day. So it's my understanding that Mr. Hundley informed the court that he had no objection to it and that the court decided that because the file had been marked no further continuances from our last conversation when it was continued due to Mr. Hundley's appearance here, that the judge decided that he was going to dismiss the case. And not just dismiss it, but to dismiss it with prejudice. At that point, that would prevent any kind of refiling, anything that any remedy that my client, the plaintiff, would have to seek remedy through the courts. And I believe that is the issue in terms of abuse of discretion that all the case law that I found requires is that discretion is given to the trial court. And both Mr. Hundley and I would agree to that. However, there has to be a reasonableness standard to that discretion. And in the Myers v. Trice case, the court laid out that, reversal is especially warranted when nothing in the case indicates that the movement's purpose for the motion is to delay or evade trial. That was not the purpose of the request for continuance in this case. Facts to the contrary was we were prepared and ready to go to trial. If I could have been there, I would have been there, and this matter would have been resolved. Unfortunately, my client, who suffered this injury in 2012, is now 2019, and this case is still unresolved. And that is unfortunate both for the plaintiff and the defendant, who has had this hanging over their head this entire time. But unfortunately, in this case, I believe that the trial court did not look at all the possible remedies that were out there and took the most extreme remedy, which is to dismiss the case with prejudice and deny the plaintiff the opportunity to present her case. And another remedy which the court could have taken would have been to allow the plaintiff to present the case herself, but at that point, I don't believe that would be a reasonable outcome as well, because you're asking a layperson to present a complicated personal injury case which involved injuries worth traumatic brain injuries as well as physical injuries, and having to cross-examine a defendant, things of that nature. That's the reason why she hires counsel. And essentially what the court did was deny her access to the court and also deny her access to counsel by not allowing for the continuance. In this case, Your Honor, we believe that the more reasonable thing would have been to remove the case from the docket and either held a hearing for me to explain to the court why I wasn't present, to provide documentation if the court had concerns, but none of those options were taken. It was just quite simply the case was dismissed with prejudice. And, Your Honor, not only does that create an issue with the law, but also I think that's a public policy issue. And this has been raised previously in which, well, why don't you have someone appear for you? Well, that would mean that I would need to be a member of a bigger firm, which I'm not. I'm a solo practitioner. And unfortunately, when you're a solo, you are it. And if you get sick, there's no one to cover for you. Sometimes you can call a friend and say, hey, can you step in for me? Usually you do that on a simpler matter, like a traffic ticket, you know, maybe even a more common issue. If it was a friend that could handle a DUI, I could give them a 30, you know, five-minute rundown of the case and hope that they could stay in it for me if it was a worst-case scenario. When you're dealing with a complex case like a personal injury case, there's no way I could reasonably get another attorney up to speed in a matter of a couple minutes to go in there and to be able to present that case for my client. So by taking the action that the court did, essentially the court has said, if you're a solo practitioner and you get sick, best of luck to you.
In fact, not knowing when you first made the motion that the case would be dismissed with prejudice, if you had tried to get another attorney, you would have potentially greatly prejudiced your client.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And this is also the reason why I specifically left my cell phone with Chambers, which is if the court had a concern with they didn't believe the message, then I would have asked the court for a brief delay, allow me to get dressed, drive up there, and present myself in the condition I was in to the court and allow the court to, you know, to observe my condition. And if the court felt that I was prepared to go forward, then, of course, that would have led to other issues. But, Your Honor, I believe that's because what notice is required of an attorney to the court in order for it to be a reasonableness standard? If I had just simply called and had not contacted defense counsel the day prior, had not gone to the doctor, if I just, you know, I got the sniffles and I don't feel like showing up at trial, that is one thing. But the fact that I had spoken to defense counsel had no objection. I laid out to Chambers the steps I had taken to try to be prepared for court, to be there, and was unable to do so. And then even after the court dismissed the case for prejudice, I filed a motion for reconsideration, laid out all the information and a statement of facts for the court, and the court didn't even take up the motion for reconsideration. Well, the court denied
sure
that.
The court actually adopted at page 19 of the appendix a finding that you were, in fact, physically unable to be present at all on October 31.
Yes, Your Honor. And that's what, again, it goes back to the public policy concern of, one, it closes the doors to the courthouse to my client, which is a great concern, and which is an extreme remedy, which the court has laid out. And also, because I am a solo practitioner, if this were to be able to stand, that's precedence now for, even if you're sick, you either need to have somebody on call, which means essentially a partner, which makes a solo very difficult to do, or you risk the possibility of your cases being dismissed simply because you got ill. And I don't believe that's the policy that the court would like to lay out.
And down to 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
Yes, Your Honor. And with that, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time and hand to Ms. Allen.
Please, the court. I'm James Hunley. I represent the defendant in this case. I believe the sole issue for review in this civil appeal is whether or not the circuit court abused its discretion in refusing to grant a continuance to the plaintiff. All of the cases cited in both briefs state the rule as being the judgment or decree of the trial court will not be reversed on appeal due to the action of the trial court on a motion for continuance unless such action is plainly erroneous and prejudicial to the right of the complaining party. Abuse and prejudice are essential to reversal. And that, no question, all the cases cited recite that as being the law. As far as calling in sick, there's the case of Miller versus Johnson.
Counsel.
Yes.
Are there circumstances where the prejudice to the client is so extreme and the harm to the court is so small that alone would cause us to say there was an abuse of discretion?
That might be, Your Honor, but
is that not the case we have here?
I don't think it is. And
why?
I'll tell you why. Because
you'll concede that the harm to the client, the prejudice to the client, is extreme. It cannot be more extreme than it already is.
If we look at this from the standpoint of the court itself.
Okay, so what's the harm to the court? Well, what's the great harm to the court?
This case has been set for trial 4 times. It's been continued 3 times and would have been continued, I guess, the 4th time if anybody had shown up to make the motion. My relationship with the counsel for the plaintiff has been good. I would disagree with him on one thing, and that is that we had joint motions for continuances. That didn't happen. That what happened was he would want a continuance, and I would agree to the continuance. I didn't object to it, and when he called me on this occasion, I didn't say, no, I'm objecting, you can't do this. But you had an accident that happened in 2012. Suit was filed 1 day before the statute ran, which, okay, that happens a lot of times. Then, after suit was filed, a non-suit was taken. Then it was refiled and scheduled for trial. Continued. Scheduled again. Continued. So we have, as I say, 3 continuances, 4 times when it was set on the court's docket, and it... there's no motion for a continuance. Now, counsel called the court and said, I'm sick and I'm not going to be able to make it. I didn't question him on that. I told him I was going to appear and I would tell the court what he had told me, that he was sick. But if you're going to be absent because of illness, there's got to be some positive proof that there was an illness. And him just calling up.
He had no opportunity to provide that proof.
Well, in a doctor's report or something, he knew, he called me the day before and said he was sick. He didn't think he was going to be able to make it.
But doesn't it count for something when you're a member of the bar and you've gone through character and fitness and all that, as opposed to, you know, maybe a malingering pro se or a witness who's obviously just trying to delay things? I mean, can't the court give some stock to an attorney saying, you know, I just can't
think. If I were a judge and I had continued the case 3 times and then somebody didn't bother to show, and even the plaintiff herself, who was supposed to show up and tell the court what the problem was, and they didn't show up, the judge had sat there for a while before he made the decision to dismiss the case. And finally, he dismissed the case with prejudice.
The two of you and frankly myself in a former life are quite familiar with the Fairfax County Circuit Court.
Right.
Expecting any client to get to the right place in that courthouse without counsel is a stretch.
Judge.
But let me ask this. This file was marked no further continuances.
Right.
And you're an experienced appellate counsel. You're very professional. You've been here many times. If you had gotten a notice to come in front of the Virginia Supreme Court again, as in fact you received on a prior time, and you had asked the circuit court to continue the case and your opposing counsel had not objected to it because you needed to be here in Richmond, and the court denied it, because it says no further continuances. Mr. Hundley, I'm sorry, you had one bite at the apple of going to the Virginia Supreme Court. We're not going to let you do it a second time. Would that have been an abuse of discretion?
Well, I don't know that that would have been an abuse.
It certainly would have been greatly prejudicial to your client.
Well, it would have been, but, you know, I mean, that's the rule. I mean, if I get a notice to be here, I've got to be here. I don't think any circuit court judge would have the right to say, well, we're going to dismiss your case because the Supreme Court didn't, that's no excuse.
It would have been almost certainly an abuse of discretion. I think there wouldn't be any question it would be an abuse of discretion. I'm just trying to determine, in terms of the practicalities, in terms of the harm, how that really is distinguishable from this case.
Judge, I mean, I've practiced on the other side of the bench, on the other side of this practice all my life. and I'm very generous with agreeing to a continuance if somebody wants one. In this case, if I look at it from the court's point of view, I mean, it seems to me that the system has been abused in the sense that you wait till the last day to file your suit. That's okay. I mean, people do that. Then you file, you take a non-suit. Then you file over
which you're allowed to do.
Which you're allowed to do. Then it's set for trial, and there's a continuance thereafter, three continuances.
And one of them because you needed to be in Richmond.
One of them.
And your partner could have been in court, but you asked that it be continued, and the opposing counsel said he had no problem with it.
Granted that one of the continuances was because of my appearance here. But I feel that if we look at this from the judge's point of view, I mean, now...
But if we look at no continuance written across a file in Fairfax Circuit Court to really mean no continuance,
right. Then
the plaintiff's lawyer could have died. And under the lat logic is, sorry, well, that can't possibly be right.
No, I mean, but I think considering the circumstances as a whole, I mean...
But the fact finder here, this is what I can't get around, the fact finder, it entered the statement of facts. Paragraph 14 says he was very ill, vomiting, diarrhea. Paragraph 16, he contacted you, he contacted the court. Paragraph 19, he was physically unable to be present at trial on October 31, 2017. That's a finding of the trial court. So under the logic of the trial court, he could have passed away and it wouldn't have mattered because no continuance means no continuance. Doesn't that just sound arbitrary to you?
Well, I think it's tough, frankly, but on the other hand, I think considering the past record of this case, that they had a perfect right to say, hey, we're tired of this. We want to get, we're ready to bring this case to an end. We put the case for trial three or four different times. We've granted continuances three times. I don't think that you could say that the judge is that abusive is a pretty harsh term. And I don't think the judge is abusive under all the circumstances that exist that in denying a further continuance. In the absence of any proof other than, I don't have any reason to disbelieve plaintiff's counsel. He seems to be a gentleman. But on the other hand, there's absolutely no proof
I don't know that I'm understanding the point, because the trial court didn't say what I was thinking he was going to say when I picked the file up, which is, Judge, come on, I hear this stuff all the time. If I allow people to say I've got the sniffles, as Appellant's counsel mentioned, and I've got an automatic right of continuance, I can't do that. The trial court here made factual findings on a motion to reconsider saying he could not, he physically was ill, so ill he couldn't be present, much less present to make an excuse. That was the trial court's very finding. At that point, I don't know. I don't understand why any trial judge would have said, well, wow, hope you get better, but I'll keep this case on the docket.
Well, one reason might be that he was told that the plaintiff would be there, and the plaintiff wasn't there, to make this, to let the court know that her counsel was sick or was not going to be able to be there.
Well,
she shows up really.
Generally speaking, we don't allow litigants to make motions or to participate in the proceedings when they're represented by counsel. We look exclusively.
Well, just to show some proper respect for, you know, the system, be there at least to show some interest in your case.
How long
that morning,
did it take?
Nothing happened. That I mean, the judge, I think, just being somewhat disillusioned with everything that's been going on before, decided, hey, you knew you were supposed to be here. I have nothing from a doctor. I have nothing from anybody other than you call me at 8:30 in the morning and say, hey, I'm sick. I can't be there.
But my experience with these doctor's offices is, I mean, now some of them are just outright non-responsive.
Right.
And you have to almost use coercive, subpoenas and things. But even the ones that are, responsive, I mean, they have a million other things to do, and it can take some time. for, you know, them to prepare? I mean, take a workers' comp case or something like that. I mean, they don't send you something overnight. I mean, you kind of have to, you know, reel them in. So, and this unfolded pretty fast. So I understand your point about, well, how about a doctor's note? But in the context of this case, it just seems wholly unrealistic. If he's sick the night before, and that's when it really hits hard, and then you're now the morning of, doctor's probably not even, there's nobody at the office. Never mind. You see my problem with that?
I understand. Yeah. And that would be a problem. But, you know, the concern that I have is all that's going on before this one.
Understand.
This case, the accident happened, I mean, it's been...
Your point is you have to look at the broader context.
The last 3.5 years, and nothing's been done.
Understood.
And all of a sudden, and how many times have... I'm sure most of you have served as circuit court judges at some point. Somebody calls them and says, hey, I'm sick, I can't get there. And you're expected just to accept that. And I don't know.
Well, if the trial judge blows that off, as many of us would have done if we'd gotten the call that, no, I'm really sick, I'm sorry. And we later found out we were wrong. The guy was in the ER after a horrible illness. We would say, oh, okay, I didn't know that. I couldn't be, don't fault for me for not knowing that because you didn't make it clear to me. And you wouldn't enter a dismissal with prejudice. You'd say, all right, let's move on.
Well, counsel mentioned that we were ready for trial and taking depositions and so on. The deposition of the, not that it matters in this case, I guess, but the deposition of the primary doctor was taken 5 days before the trial. I mean, and the case had been going on for years. You know, it just kind of shows the attitude.
No, counsel. Again, I've been in this court. I've had personal injury cases. You always wait till the last minute to take the deposition of the doctor. You don't want to spend thousands and thousands of dollars if you don't have to.
I understand that.
That's not it.
Yeah. But
how do you deal with the standard in Myers versus Trice?
Myers?
Yeah, your opposing counsel cited it. When a circuit court's refusal to grant a continuance seriously imperils the just determination of the cause, the judgment has to be reversed. And would you say in this case that the continuance... Or how could you argue that the continuance in this case doesn't seriously imperil the just determination of the cause?
This, in the Myers case, Your Honor, this was not a case where there had been many continuances or anything like that. There was a mistake in the course of the trial. The wrong witness had been subpoenaed. And so they granted a continuance, I think, on that basis.
Right, but the ruling it is whether it seriously imperiled the just determination of the cause.
They did not grant the continuance on the basis that the attorney, where there's a history of continuances and set the case for trial and that sort of thing. It was a case where the witness, improper witness, had been subpoenaed. There was a mix-up in the names, and I easily understand why it might have been granted in that situation, where a mistake had been made. But here, there's just such a delay and such, it just doesn't seem right that the judge should be referred who was being abusive in this case. I don't think he was at all abusive. But I'm sympathetic to counsel and maybe to his client. On the other hand, to say that the judge was abusive in
there's actually a distinct difference between the term abusive and abusive judge and a judge who abuses his discretion. I mean, I think that's the improper term to say abusive. No indication of the judge abusing anyone. It's simply the judge did not exercise the appropriate amount of discretion.
I think when you say he abused his discretion, what you're saying is that he did not consider all the circumstances appropriately and went on and made the decision. I think here he considered the history of this case before he entered this judgment, and the case was not...
All right, Mr. Hanley, your time has expired, but we do understand the position that that you have.
Said all I could say, Judge. Thank you.
You have a brief amount of time for rebuttal.
Your Honor, I would, I guess, use the last 2 minutes to talk about a little bit of the history. In each of the prior continuances, the first two continuances, they were made more than a month in advance of the trial date, because of an issue that had come up in discovery. And both times it was, we laid out for the judge that was receiving the phone call and determining whether or not to make the continuance. It was, this form came up, discovery, Your Honor, we need additional time to verify it and make sure that it's true and accurate, because it was a form that had been missing for months and all of a sudden it showed up. And dealt directly with whether or not there was a $500,000 insurance policy or there was no insurance.
Let me ask you a question. Is that in the record?
I believe...
in other words, are you arguing from your recollection, or are you arguing
I'm arguing from my recollection of the actual phone calls, Your Honor, in which we called into chambers.
Well, I'm not sure that's a proper argument.
Yes, Judge, I apologize. What I believe is in the record is the fact that the phone calls were made more than a month in advance for each of those. So these were not last-second phone calls trying to delay the trial. It was, Your Honor, this came up, we need a continuance. Judge granted us a one-month continuance, and it was, then we called back, again, a month in advance of the trial, said, Your Honor, that 1 month was not sufficient because by investigating this, we found these other tripwires.
I wonder if it's right for us in this dialogue to be talking about abuse of discretion on a denial of a continuance, that what the trial judge did was a sua sponte dismissal with prejudice. And whether if the trial judge thought initially that you were making a sniffles argument, which happens, as you know, from time to time, and trial judges hear that, but later found out, no, I was mistaken, he actually was really sick, then leaving a dismissal with prejudice on this file on its face appears to be an abuse of discretion.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, what I was trying to do is lay out the facts for the Myers case, which is this was not done in an attempt to evade trial. You know, we were prepared and ready to go to trial.
But in theory, the trial judge could have arguably, as the appellee has pointed out, thought maybe you were making a Sniffles argument, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's the reason why we filed the motion for reconsideration, was to actually make sure the court was aware.
When you filed the motion for reconsideration, did you attach a CVS bill for the Pedialyte or a note from the doctor saying you were actually there or a bill showing you actually paid the doctor? What else did you give the judge in the motion to reconsider other than the factual recitation?
Your Honor, I did not attach anything to the actual motion for reconsideration. What I laid out at the very end of it, because I didn't think it was appropriate to be attaching unredacted medical bills to a motion that had nothing to do with the case itself.
Well, I'm just wondering if perhaps the trial court continued down the path, but for the recitation and the statement of facts, that perhaps it was the sniffles undocumented. I'm just trying to figure out what happened.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and that's where in the motion reconsideration, I believe it was on the last page, I stated to the court that upon setting up a motion that we would file plaintiff intends to file a memorandum in support of its motion for consideration prior to a hearing, in which case I believe that the memorandum is something that would have been appropriate to attach medical records to. The motion for reconsideration was to get it back before the court to lay out the factual nature of the court, and if the court required additional information, that's what the memorandum would have been for. The court never set a hearing date for that motion for reconsideration. The court just dismissed denied the motion for reconsideration, but then incorporated everything from that into its findings on the appeal.
And so the court essentially stipulated to all of your factual allegations.
That's the way I look at it, Your Honor, yes.
All right, your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Call the next case.